Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn Bridge. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn.
Welcome again to Howe's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight is our monthly recap episode where we look back on all the top news stories in Brooklyn real estate from the past month of November. Stay tuned for Bob.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn.
Welcome back to Howe's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. As I mentioned, it's our recap episode. We're looking back at the top news stories from Brooklyn real estate in November. And here, as always, is our host, Robert Howe.
Well, thank you, Jason, and welcome everyone to Howe's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe. And as always, we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. Once again, we're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace, as Rising Tide Marketing. And as Jason mentioned, we are doing a few days late, but better late than never, our November recap of all the great things that are happening in Brooklyn real estate. And once again, Jason has done a tremendous job of scouring the newspapers, periodicals, and all the internet articles about all things positive that are going on in Brooklyn, and today is no different from prior reports. So, Jason, tell us some of the things that you got going on for tonight's show.
Well, I've got a couple of interesting stories. The first one comes from The Bridge, a Brooklyn business news media outlet. And it kind of picks up from our last week's episode where we welcomed a newly minted real estate broker to the program to talk about what it's like to be a new broker in the Brooklyn real estate market. And this article is titled "An Insider's Take on Brooklyn's Real Estate Boom." It talks to the head of sales for Douglas Elliman's Brooklyn, one of Douglas Elliman's Brooklyn offices, and it's pretty interesting. It's a pretty frank and blunt take, and very in depth and very right to the point about what it's like being a broker in the Brooklyn market.
Yes, this is funny that this article came out, as you point out, right after we talked to Austin Stanton, a newly minted broker out of Stribling, asking him what he was interested in, what made him interested in pursuing a career in real estate. And sure enough, I guess the folks at Douglas Elliman may have been listening and came up with the idea of, well, let's have our Brooklyn person talk about the type of brokers that, or the type of salespeople that they are looking for. And this business, the real estate business, has really evolved from when I started in the 80s. In the 80s, maybe there were a lot of part-time people doing it as a second type of business or following, and there weren't really too many people dedicated full-time to a real estate industry, the sales portion of it. And thanks to, I think, many of the TV and cable shows glorifying house sales and house renovations and brokers driving around in Lamborghinis selling $20 million properties, throughout the United States, did this now become a very sought after avocation. And, it's interesting that this fellow from Douglas Elliman, I think actually the article is really pretty comprehensive in terms of the types of people that they're looking for and the training that they go through and the early days of their experience. That's what I took away from this article. I don't know what your thoughts are, Jason.
Well, one of the things that stands out is, like you said, the types of people that they're looking for, and they get right into it about how recruiting new agents works, and how they look for people with graduate degrees, like MBAs and, degrees in finance, banking, or law. And it makes you think, wow, they're really looking for people who probably have a lot of student loans to pay off and they're starting out bottom rung of that ladder. And I know from experience, I know folks who who started out in the trenches, and they mentioned that in this. He's saying that, you know, he didn't mince words and say, you know, people think it's very glamorous from looking at the programming, the myriad of programming that's out there portraying real estate brokers as living the life of rich and famous, and saying that you're fighting in the trenches, and saying, you know, you start out, if you want to make money quick, the best bet is to start out in rentals. And I know rentals is a brutal, brutal business to start out in, to be in, but to start out there, it could be, could really beat you down.
Yeah, I think if you told a person who was interested in breaking into real estate that they would have to start out in rentals, they would say, well, how can I afford that Lamborghini that I'm hoping to lease, and where is that $10 million, you know, apartment that I'm looking to sell, or that Hamptons property that I'm looking to sell. I don't know if that would be the lead, come on to someone who wants to get into the real estate business. But it is interesting, and this kind of jives with what I said earlier. You know, in the 80s, maybe a large majority of people were part-time people doing this as a part-time job. But here, this fellow says he's looking for MBAs, finance majors, banking majors, or people with a law background to get into that. I don't know if that certainly raises the bar. And you know, when you come to think about the fact that you're buying just about everything in Brooklyn now is about $1 million plus. I mean, who do you want to be dealing with? You know, the broker is probably the first interface you have with the real estate environment in New York City. Don't you want to be dealing with someone who has, multiple degrees? He's right. Certainly you'd want your broker to have an MBA or finance, but I think there might be a little bit more that you have to factor in a little more of, yes, you may want your broker to have all of those credentials, but you do want your broker to have some real-time street experience, blended in for that. He did, the whole thing about starting out in rentals, I don't know if that's as glamorous as they portray on the TV and cable shows. They don't talk about somebody renting an apartment. They talk about someone buying a $10 million apartment. That's a lot different. But he does then go on to make the point, you know, they do ask this Douglas Elliman fellow about how about some of their competitors who are touting that maybe they are more technologically advanced, maybe their work environment is a bit sexier than other work environments, better appointed, better amenities. And he basically says, look, you can have all the amenities you want in your office, but you probably don't want to be, if you're in your office too long, that probably means you're not out in the field actually doing business. So that was a pretty interesting point. But then he went on to talk about a couple other topics. The interviewer asked him if Brooklyn home prices will keep soaring, and he was optimistic. Although I guess in our minds we're thinking Brooklyn real estate is growing 100% time at a week per week. It's really, if you look over a year, it's probably about a 10% increase. But there are some hot neighborhoods, some areas, in the middle of Brooklyn that maybe have double, triple that. 8 to 10% increase in property values. I don't know if you had the same take as I did Jason, on that.
I did. I noticed when he kind of wanted to make it clear that we're not in this, 15 to 20% growth that he called it a gradual increase, which is healthy and sustainable, and that's what he seems to think that that's where we're at, and that's where we continue to be, and that's what you want to see, rather than huge spikes that obviously won't last. And that's it seems that that's what Brooklyn has been in, even though maybe some areas over others might have seen a steeper climb and seen prices go up maybe higher and quicker. All around, we've been on a gradual increase for good 3 or 4 years now. And even when the whole, we've talked about this before too, when the whole real estate collapse happened, New York doesn't really tend to react the way the rest of the country would react, because New York will probably always retain its value. It might stall, like in the when the collapse happened. It might take a couple of years to kind of see that uptick again, but nobody, I don't think, really was as underwater as other parts of the country were in this neck of the woods. So he's really pointing out to the health of the market for real estate in Brooklyn.
Yes, he's pointing out, you want healthy increases, but you don't want increases that will cause a bubble and hurt you. Later on, he did though then go on to make a comment about condo buildings, all the new high rises that are going on, and Brooklyn is pretty much an area of low rise buildings, with the exception of maybe a Williamsburg and a downtown Brooklyn. Do you see the 30, 40, 50 story buildings? But he goes on to make the point that, you know, that's what people like about Brooklyn is the low-rise nature. Sure, they could go up six stories, eight stories. But when you get up to 30, 40, 50 stories, I think that's a different type of buyer, one who's probably not living there full-time and or maybe a buyer who's just has the property to jump on an Uber or a cab or a train over to their job in Manhattan and spends most of their time in Manhattan and very little time in Brooklyn. But by far the majority of people who are looking to live in Brooklyn are looking in Brooklyn because of the low-rise nature of the community. And I don't know if you share that thought with me or not.
Oh, absolutely. And I also, in talking about community, he does also point to a couple of neighborhoods. They ask him, what neighborhoods have some great potential. He points to Dippus Park and mentions some of the prices that, some of those places could potentially be going for, on the high end, up to $3 million. There is that still, gradual growth. When you hear numbers like that, you do tend to think of that's a exponential jump up. But these hot neighborhoods that have been hot for a while and continue to stay that way, and there are other neighborhoods and areas that are always looking to be the next hot Brooklyn neighborhood. We talked about it. We're going to talk about our own neighborhood coming up in our next story, Bay Ridge. It seems like there is no shortage of space in Brooklyn that isn't on somebody's heat index.
Yes, and that's a good segue into our next article. You found something about Bay Ridge real estate, and, And why don't you give us a little introduction to that?
This one really jumped out at me because we rarely, you know, aside from the events that go on, the community events and the small businesses that we have come on, and we rarely talk about Bay Ridge as, you know, the next hot area or, you know, the trendy area, because we probably because of our proximity to the city, we're a little further away. The article does mention from Brownstoner, talks about from brownstone to limestone, three reasons why buying in Bay Ridge makes sense. And one of the reasons is the ferry that they just put in recently. So that's kind of closing that gap a little bit from Bay Ridge to the city. But one of the other reasons that is because it's very communal. It is our community, and it is kind of maybe an old-fashioned or a traditional community as opposed to some of those more urban hipster areas where the tech people are moving in, where it's younger and it's more, you know, the nightlife might be a little bit more vibrant. There might be stuff going on 24/7 or more like city living than the atmosphere in Bay Ridge. But according to this article, people might be migrating our way because of the value that they get.
Well, I think there is definitely, you know, if you're looking in downtown Brooklyn, looking to spend $2 million on an apartment located on the 33rd floor of one of those high-rise condos that has a pool on the roof, certainly that could be attractive. You know, you get city-wide and borough-wide views. But then you say, geez, for $2 million, I still only have an apartment. I could shoot out to Bay Ridge, have a whole house, have a golf course, hospital, waterfront, R-Train. R-Train is a little slow, granted, but you do get a chance of emails on your trip into Manhattan, so there is an advantage, you know, to that. You do get some downtime being disconnected from the world while you're on the R train. And you do, as you point out, Jason, you have a sense of community that really doesn't exist in too many sections of New York City. So when you come out to Bay Ridge, you are getting a home, you're getting a lifestyle, you're getting a community. You're getting the whole package. You can send your kids to school, go to your local places of worship, shop locally. People know your name. And that's something that we are sorely missing in this world today when with a click, you can get the FedEx guy to drop something at your door and ring the bell and walk away. You don't even get a chance to say hello to the FedEx or the UPS or the mailman anymore. You know, it's a click and a ring and you got it. And, you know, that doesn't happen in Bay Ridge. The thing they say about Bay Ridge is, you know, you shop at one place for your bread, you go to another place for your macaroni, third place you go for your hummus and your baba ganoush, and those people know your name. And that's an experience that is sort of invaluable and doesn't exist in many communities, I dare say, definitely in New York and maybe throughout much of the country.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's a tremendous selling point for Bay Ridge, and also, you know, like you mentioned, the bang for your buck you get with Bay Ridge, the ferry service that's kind of making that distance a little smaller to get from, you know, people get to work. And it is, unless the thing that they mentioned is the stable housing stock, and you know, you get a nice variety of homes, a lot of different looks, a lot of different styles. There's not one uniform look to it. Every block could be a different, you know, different experience or a different flavor. And your the closeness that Bay Ridge has to 30th Avenue, what a great shopping area it is with Restaurant Row and It really is a really unique place. I think it's probably the best neighborhood to live in Brooklyn. It's got a lot of everything and a lot to take in and enjoy.
And you do mention, just let me repeat, a stable housing, a stable type of buildings. You're not going to wake up the next day next to a 50-story condo building in Bay Ridge. You may end up with, a 6-unit condo, but you're not going to, that's maybe 2 or 3 levels high, but you're not going to end up with a 50-story building next to you. So pretty much, throughout Bay Ridge, what you see is what you're going to have for, very much of the foreseeable future. But then you did get a few more articles. Jason, what's the next thing we're going to talk about?
Yeah, well, quickly we're going to go through this one, because this one, the reason why I included it wasn't a really positive article. It comes from The Bridge, again, the Brooklyn Business newspaper. This title is Inside the Blight of Empty Brooklyn Storefronts. And the reason I included it is really interesting, is that it talks about the areas where all these commercial properties have become, have gone out of business and almost like a ghost town and seem to go unoccupied and vacant in long stretches of blocks and streets that have multiple empty storefronts. And I guess we can all imagine what it looks like. We've seen them in different areas where we, maybe even outside of New York, where we've been through an area that seems a little bit depressed. And the reason why I include is because I don't see this in Bay Ridge. I think, I think of Third Avenue. I think of like our shopping districts here in Bay Ridge and Third and Fifth Avenue and surrounding areas. I don't see empty storefronts.
Well, of course, there's a disclaimer. I'm the president of the Merchants of Third Avenue, and I would like to take credit for almost 0%. Commercial vacancy, but that would be going a little too far. But I do take credit for living in Bay Ridge and being active on Third Avenue and keeping Third Avenue as vibrant as possible so that when potential retailers come here, they realize that they're on a solid strip. Now, we will probably never have, a Ralph Lauren or one of the more fancy lady-style boutiques on Third Avenue. And I know it's funny, only a few years ago people were saying, why don't you get a Barnes & Noble on Third Avenue? And, I don't even know if Barnes & Noble is around anymore. But, what we are looking for on Third Avenue are sort of like small businesses, mom and pops, and people who live in the community, who are investing in the community and spending their time on Third Avenue. And these are the majority of the shopkeepers that we have. And I think that, by and large, has kept the Third Avenue vacancy rate, in the single digits. Whereas you take these other areas, say a Court Street, a Smith Street, which were hot and rising, those landlords got spoiled, thought this run would be forever, that these national chains would want to take their little 20 by 50 store and put one of their businesses in there. Well, that has gone away, along with, many of the larger Macy's and Sears and Kmart stores. People are shopping online. Don't know if that's good or bad, but that's the way that the commerce, is taking this economy. And so retailers have to be, a little more flexible in terms of what they're doing, and maybe having a storefront on a pricey avenue, with the exception of maybe 57th Street and 5th Avenue in Manhattan, or Madison Avenue or 5th Avenue in Manhattan. you know, maybe they're rethinking their strategies, not necessary to be in a, you know, on a hot commercial strip like Smith Street was at one point, or Court Street was or is, and they're rethinking their philosophy. So you do end up with these empty stores and landlords looking for a national chain to come in. And guess what? The national chain is not coming in anymore. They're going, you know, for a different plan. You may get a coffee shop for half the rent. You may get a small restaurant for half the rent. But you're not getting a national chain, you know, for top dollar anymore. That has all changed. And you see that in, you know, the hot commercial strips where there are a lot of vacancies.
And with that, we're gonna finish up. We're gonna wrap it up with an upbeat story from the Brooklyn Eagle. The Brooklyn Real Estate Board salutes their civic leaders at the annual holiday party. And since you are one of the honorees, why don't you give us your review of the evening's festivities and some of the highlights?
Well, of course, I was honored to be selected to receive an award for a civic involvement and being a you know, a real estate attorney at the Brooklyn Real Estate Board a couple weeks ago, and I did share, you know, those honors with a couple other people in the community who have distinguished themselves in other areas. But I do want to, you know, give some kudos to the Brooklyn Real Estate Board, a group of very highly qualified, very highly ethical group of brokers and salespeople who really serve the community and not only serve the community, but, you know, I did make the remarks, you know, in my acceptance speech that they work to keep the community stable and in a fashion that we remember it was, so that we could pass that type of community on to our children. I also have my grandchildren in attendance there, and to our grandchildren, so that they can say, this is kind of the neighborhood that, you know, we remember growing up in. And, you know, it's just something about stability that I think is important in one person's life or a couple generations of life, that someone can look at a community decades later and say, you know, this is something similar to the way my father or grandfather lived, and we have pretty much, you know, kept it that way. You know, living is more than just having a nice house, a nice condo, a nice co-op. Living is the community that you live in. And I think the Brooklyn Real Estate Board, as well as the merchants of Third Avenue and many of the people in the Bay Ridge community, try to keep, you know, the area the way they remember in order to pass that on to our children and grandchildren. Things change very fast in life. We don't want our community to change that fast. We do need some stability that we can look to and build upon. But it was a wonderful night. They did honor myself, Julie Thumb, who is a real estate broker, very successful real estate broker in Bay Ridge, other people who distinguished themselves, Amaris Essis, a successful owner of Mousen's Jewelers and also a place out in Kings Highway, for their involvement in the community, their dedication to living in the community, having a business in the community. Dr. Joseph Caruana was also honored, talked about the opioid epidemic and the work that he's done to bring that to everybody's attention and to resolve the issue. So the honorees were, a little kind of diverse, but all of them had the common thread of working in the community, staying in the community, trying to make the community better and stable and something that we can all be proud of.
And with that, we're at the end of our show and a great recap of all the things that went on in Brooklyn real estate in the month of November. And Bob, why don't you take us out?
Well, thank you, Jason. And this once again concludes our radio program. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show. And thank you, Jason, once again for the research that you've done, bringing us all the best stories that make Brooklyn a very hot and very good neighborhood. This is House New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown.